Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Sara Gonne. Sara, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks. Just a bit nasal from a little bit of a flu-y thing, but hopefully I won't sort of fade on you.
I'm sure you are. I hope you are energized and rested because you've actually been overseas recently. And we also have with us today Mr. Michael Morris, who is also actually just come back from holiday, although not in exotic climes, but simply in the Western Cape. How are you, Mike?
I'm very well, thank you. Very, very glad to have had a chance to get into the sea, which seems a bit of an odd thing to say for a Capetonian, I suppose, but we tend not to make the most of the Cape, living in the Cape. But great to be with you. Nice to see you back, Sarah.
Yeah, I must say, my mother was a Capetonian, grew up on the beachfront, and I do think Capetonians are all a bit mad with how nonchalant they are about their nightmarishly frozen sea. but let's not dwell on that. Instead, today's episode is going to be focused on goings on in Gauteng, because Gauteng is kind of, it's all sort of crystallizing as a kind of huge crisis in Gauteng, a political crisis and an infrastructure crisis, and probably a financial crisis not too far away. So let's talk once again about what is going on in the city of Tshwane, South Africa's capital city. I saw someone in the comments of the show, one of the shows last week, saying that they were upset that we were calling it Tshwane and not Pretoria. I mean, regardless of how you feel about that debate, the municipality is called Tshwane, and it includes not just Pretoria, but also some of these other parts like Hammanskraal, which is why I do that. But anyway, I digress. So let's get into it. It looks increasingly like there was no actual deal reached between Action SA and the ANC as to the future of the municipality of Tshwane. Or if there was a deal, somebody's gone back on it. It's not entirely clear. It's increasingly becoming apparent that both the ANC and Action SA intend to put forward a candidate and that the EFF seeks to be included in any future government. However, the DA is not taking all of this lying down. They wrote a letter to the ANC's leadership, which was leaked to the media, I suspect probably by people within the ANC. That's my speculation. That the DA will withdraw from negotiations to stabilize the three other metros around the country, which they're apparently talking to the ANC about stabilizing. These include Tshwane, Ekurhuleni, and EThekwini. Tshwane, Ekurhuleni, EThekwini, and Nelson Mandela Bay, if Silas Brink is not returned as the mayor of Tshwane. Zilla wrote, "The purpose of this letter is to make it clear that Thursday's events in Tshwane mark the end of the progress we have made nationwide in our negotiations on various models for cooperation in metropolitan municipalities where no party governs with a majority. The DA will now withdraw from these talks. The ANC must take responsibility for the ongoing chronic instability in these metros and the associated service delivery failures leading up to South Africa's local government elections in 2026. The return of Silas Brink as executive mayor of Tshwane is a non-negotiable for these talks to continue. The ANC must take note of the anger in the capital towards the parties responsible for the removal of Mayor Brink." She says that it's unfortunate that progress has been undone so quickly by the stubbornness of the ANC's Gauteng leadership under the direction of Panyaza Lesufi. She said, quote, "Until the ANC's national leadership reaffirms its authority in Gauteng, the metros in our most densely populated provinces will continue to disintegrate with extremely negative economic consequences." DA leader John Steenhuisen has also added to this, claiming that he thinks that the provincial Gauteng ANC were acting against the wishes of the national ANC. News 24 talked to someone who is very frustratingly described as a source within the ANC's inner circle who asked to remain anonymous. I don't know, that could be anyone from Cyril Ramaphosa to someone we've never heard of, that Lesufi was acting against instructions from the national office, and this came after Lesufi disrupted negotiations for a unity government with the DA at provincial level. And apparently there's even some talk within the ANC of dissolving Lesufi's provincial executive committee due to the party's poor performance in Gauteng elections in May this year. The Gauteng ANC hit back at this very aggressively. They put out a statement on social media saying the African National Congress in Gauteng has noted with deep concern the malicious attempts by the DA to sow a wedge between the ANC and Gauteng Provincial Executive Committee, which is a duly elected structure of a unitary organization. On numerous occasions, the Democratic Alliance has sought to cement a narrative of disunity within the ANC. It has desperately sought to position the ANC Gauteng PEC as a rogue structure that has perpetually contradicted the posture of the National Executive Committee. Panyaza Lesufi himself also attacked Zilla, saying, quote, Gogo Helen Zilla, the decision to support the motion of no confidence was taken by the National Working Committee of the ANC. No amount of propaganda and misuse of media houses will change that narrative. The decision not to incorporate the DA into the Gauteng government of provincial unity was also taken by the national leadership of the ANC. The sooner you accept this reality, the sooner the healing process will begin. Call us names like rogue as you wish. The reality is the ANC will never be a branch of the DA. He also went on to say that the ANC is one. There's no provincial or local ANC. We are one ANC, not a federal movement. One wonders whether the lady doth protest too much. Sarah, what do you make of all this?
It's so wonderful. I mean, on the last point, if the ANC NEC agreed with the PEC, so everyone was on the same page, that's bad news. If the PEC did their own thing and largely ignored the ANC nationally, it's a bad thing. So whichever way they paint it, I think the very fact that one way or the other they've been rumbled for the rogues that they are by the opposition figure that they love to be patronizing about and call naughty and gogo and, you know, all sorts of misogynistic rubbish, they are what people say they are, and that's why they're getting so defensive. It's not as if this is new. I mean, when the Gauteng provincial government was formed, the DA supported Panyaza Lesufi as premier, and then the negotiations fell apart because he did what he wanted and he emasculated the offers. You know, he made it almost impossible for the DA to even consider coming on board, other than really weakened. Wouldn't have the power. And I mean, he's a cowboy. He always has been. So this is really just a catfight to try and make them look like they had full, you know, support and it was all kosher. Even if they had it, it was not kosher because it's bad faith. It's not going. The bottom line is it's not going to do anything for the citizens of Tshwane. I'm sure what the ANC decided is that they, in order to regain their power, they have to go back to the big cities and to the metropoles. And I believe that Tshwane is probably the biggest of its kind in the world. And they had to reconfigure local politics because it had done so badly nationally. And it was the one area where the only competition was the DA, not the MK or the EFF, etc. The real competition was the DA. And I'm sure they work on the basis that they'll either get some things done, but in the case that they don't, they're hoping that whatever the DA's done in Tshwane in the last 2 years will bear increasing fruit and they'll be able to claim the kudos for it. So that, I suggest, is probably the thinking that went behind it. And all they needed was the votes. And someone said to Terman, I'm sure we'll give you the mayorship. And someone else said they will give you the mayorship. And somebody else said, maybe they'll give you the mayorship. And however ASA chose to respond to it, I think the view of most of us who look at it a little more, I won't say dispassionately, but from a remove, said that without a cast iron undertaking from the get-go, Herman Schaber would be the only person who would be surprised by what's happened, and that is that it looks like the ANC is going to put forward an ANC candidate for mayor. I see that although Helen was very strident about municipal and probably had to show for DA purposes that, you know, they're not taking this lying down, they didn't mention the GNU at national level. And they gave credit to Fikile Mbalula and David Makura, who led the negotiations to try and not end up with the result we ended up with. So that's probably part of the schism that so offends someone as skullduggerous as Panyaza Lesufi. So it's all fun and games. Gauteng is where it's at and where it will not be if they carry on going where they're at.
Yeah, we'll get to the big problems that need to be solved in Gauteng very shortly. But, you know, one got the impression from kind of watching the media sort of build up towards this and the reporting that Action SA and the ANC had been in deep, you know, intricate talks, working out every detail of what was going to happen. And then apparently they weren't. I have no idea what they agreed on because they don't appear to have agreed on anything other than we're getting rid of the DA. And it's just kind of so bizarre to see. I mean, I suspect Mashaba was perhaps hoping that the Tswane Action SA would be kind of playing the role that, say, Al Jamaha played in Joburg, of being the sort of compromise candidate between the ANC and the EFF. But yeah, it doesn't seem like it's working out that way. The ANC in Gauteng seems to be very wary these days of relying too much on the EFF, at least on the local level. We've seen that in Ekurhuleni and now also in Johannesburg, where ASA is helping to protect the ANC from majority in that city. But Michael, what do you make of this? It's quite interesting to see, firstly, how sometimes when there's much talk and speculation of deals going on behind the scenes, doesn't really seem like much is happening actually in reality. And also at the same time, the DA sort of thing here of trying to create a carrot and a stick, in this case, the carrot being that we will prop the ANC up in a bunch of municipalities around the country. I mean, what do you make of that idea? And what do you make of this whole mess?
I mean, it is very interesting, as both of you have referred to, the difference between what's happening at the national level, where there certainly do appear to have been fairly solid negotiations and documents and agreements and signed sort of undertakings, which, you know, surely the political parties must know is an absolute prerequisite for getting, a relatively stable government together and an arrangement, you know, in place that's going to last reasonably long time and so on and be able to deliver what the parties themselves have promised. And the distinction between that, the national level, and what's happening at the local level, and this quite interesting narrative that is partly, one has to read these unnamed sources, as you say, Nicholas. We don't know whether it's, you know, a senior official or some local councillor, but nevertheless, it does seem to align with this idea that there's something amiss in the ANC's provincial, Gauteng provincial politicking, perhaps even defying national instructions, but certainly, you know, going off on tangents. One imagines that Panyasa Lusufi probably has quite a visceral aversion to anything like cooperating with the DA, and yet the ANC in Tshwane and all the other four, I think it is, or three metros where there are these talks to kind of stabilize the governance, the ANC is actually the weaker party, having demonstrably been the one that is responsible for very poor governance. And we're going to get to that a little later in the show, I think. So it doesn't actually argue from a position of strength. It quite likely would benefit from cooperating with a party that has managed to run at least this metro in the Western Cape and other parts of the country pretty well, been shown, you know, that it can do so over a longish period with quite ordinary sort of sensible, pragmatic governance procedures. So it certainly does seem that, you know, the ANC needs the DA slightly more than the DA needs the ANC. I think there's a certain risk in Zilla's using the kind of trump card of pulling out of an arrangement, but as Sara says, she's expressly not referred to anything at the national level. It is simply about stabilizing those metros. So quite a powerful tool, I think, quite a powerful position that she's adopted, and I think she can exert some pressure on this process. There's just something I just wanted to mention in passing that you quoted a little bit, Nicholas, from I think, was it Panyasa Lusufi's ex-post, or it might have been the Gauteng ANC's experts.
It was the party,
yeah. And they referred, for instance, to sowing a wedge, and my hair in the back of my head, neck stood on end at this terrible mixed metaphor. But I did think there was somebody ought to get a medal secretly in the ANC for coming up with this adverb, Nicodemously. They referred to the GA having some kind of if talks Nicodemously with certain elements in the ANC. Anyway, that's quite beside the point. But they clearly are absolutely rattled. I'm sure Herman Mashaba is also. And I see here, I mean, somebody saying Michael Morris is ignoring the poor township folk who has said problem that society. And our colleague Morris wrote in a press statement on Friday brought this out as well, that, you know, it's time to take city governance seriously. It's always the people who are going to suffer from the musical chairs going on and the power play and so on, and that it's really time to take this seriously. So I think, yeah, these are all very good points.
Sara, any final comments on this? I mean, it's now an open question as to what happens when the new mayor needs to be elected, I think in 10 days or something like that. I think they have 14 days from Thursday last week to elect a new mayor. We could see anything from a small party mayor, maybe, to Action SA getting the mayorship, to the ANC getting the mayorship, to the DA being returned to power. I mean, we seem to be sitting with just as much uncertainty now as we did before the motion of no confidence. Any final thoughts, Sarah, before we move on?
No, just to say, perhaps I'll hopefully get out of the silos Vic is worried that we seem to be in. Make no mistake, there's a lot of the ANC who will do anything to get out of the relationship with the DA for all sorts of bad reasons that we don't have to canvass. We've canvassed before. But the problem is, as Michael's already said, the ANC survival, which it's now pinned on municipal, whoever it chooses, whatever sort of mayor they end up with, it depends on how much it succeeds. And its success is going to largely depend on the work that the DA helps it get through. The fact that the majority of the ANC don't see it, or they see that it's crucial to hang on to Gauteng because they don't have the power in Natal or the Western Cape, you know, that's certainly a reality. It would be a disastrous reality, and it's in a way what one may expect from the ANC. So one's really looking at one's trying to look at this with some sort of rationality and clarity, but it may be apples and pears because I think the ideological, which probably largely means ineptitude and corruption, will outweigh the need to actually make the ANC succeed in the run up too. So who will we end up with? I don't know, but I don't think they'll bring Sylvia Brink back. I think whatever they do, maybe they will. Who knows? I mean, this is fun and games. As you say, in an area that needs to be taken incredibly, incredibly seriously, because service delivery, as we all know, I mean, I can't welcome my Tshwane residential colleagues to life in Johannesburg. And as we'll talk about,
yes.
Water in particular. So not being starry-eyed about this for a second, and as I say, just not entirely trying to avoid seeing the west side of the ANC, but yep.
One last thing I'd like to say on this is I would actually like to see more interest in-depth reporting on the dynamics of the KZN government, which seems to have, at least from my fairly limited knowledge, been a little bit more sort of stable and calm, actually, than many of the other coalition agreements around the country. And that's quite interesting because, of course, that's a sort of quite closely divided government between the IFP, ANC, and DA there. Which is an interesting mix. But anyway, so let's keep our focus here on on Gauteng, and the reason that all of these, all of this political instability in the metros is such a big issue is because we are heading for a very big crisis in Gauteng. I actually hadn't read this piece when I was talking about it last week. I said that Gauteng is and particularly Johannesburg, I thought was headed for a big water crisis. And I see that Dr. Anthony Turton, who is with the Center for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State, actually wrote an article detailing what he calls as a major crisis with the water system in Gauteng. He says, and I'm quoting from his piece here, it's titled "Blame Shifting by Municipalities Nudges Gauteng Closer to Day Zero." It is no secret that Gauteng is fast on its way to a full-blown day zero crisis. This clear statement was placed in the public domain by the Department of Water and Sanitation when it created the platform for Water Secure Gauteng in June. The cause of the Gauteng water insecurity is multifaceted, but is essentially driven by an imbalance between demand and supply. The main driver on the demand side of the equation is the general collapse of the water infrastructure in various municipalities being supplied by Rand Water. As an indicator of this, Johannesburg Water is losing around half of the water supply to it by Rand Water. Now, that's mostly, it seems, through leaks and problems with the infrastructure. But this is the really crazy stat. Imphaleni, which is the municipality around Funderbijl Park and Vereeniging in the south of Gauteng, is apparently losing 72% of all the water supplied to it to leakages and other things like that, which is just a crazy number. Anyway, Dr. Turton goes on to say, the cause of Gauteng water insecurity, he says, we therefore have to face the stark reality of a collapse of water supply network playing out before our eyes. However, if all parties simply cooperate, Gauteng may yet avert day zero. He then puts out a number of steps that need to be taken, in his opinion, to solving the problem. He says the leaks in the network need to be fixed. Infrastructure upgrades need to be invested in using taxes and rates. Illegal connections, so people siphoning off water from the system, need to be cracked down on. There need to be phased water restrictions to curb demand in the short term. And they need to implement a rational behavioral change program designed to educate all about water usage to try and prevent water overusage by people. And I think those are all pretty sensible things to do and pretty simple things to do, but I'm not sure how easy they are to do, especially when the politics is not being sorted out. And this is exactly why politics is so important. If the municipalities in Gauteng continue to be chaotic, changing mayors all the time, trading horses between different, you know, patronage-based parties, you're just never going to be able to fix these problems. Michael, what do you make of this?
I think your final point is exactly right. That, you know, the only real solution is better, sensible, pragmatic political direction being given to the public service to do their jobs in the way that is kind of set out for them. That really is the only way ultimately this is going to work. If I think back to, and we spoke about this I think 2 weeks ago, but to think back to Cape Town's day zero crisis, water crisis in what is it, 2016? I think it's amazing how the time recedes. There were very clear objectives that were communicated every day from the city. It included behavioral change. This is what you can do as a household to relieve the burden and to extend this likely D-Day. If you do this, we will, for our side, we can undertake to do certain things. And what the city then worked on very, very vigorously was providing details of water collection points, of their own emergency planning. They would even consider spending a lot of money on expanding desalination. There were desalination plants at various points around the city. Every day, we were told how much water was being converted. We were told what the dam levels were, literally down to, you know, liters. We could have a sense of how much we were actually contributing to saving the city from reaching day zero. All these things. So and that's all only possible if you've got a sound political government in the city, and a civil service that feels it is accountable to that government. So I think you're absolutely right. Starting with that, there's this astonishing a metaphor that Anthony Turton uses. He says the metaphor of a leaking bucket explains the relationship between Rand water and municipalities vividly. He says, think of Rand water as a hose and most of the Gauteng municipalities as leaking buckets. And that really is a major problem. We also, every city, I think, has leaking, leaking problem with water leakage and loss of water. But one of the things you do is you incentivize people to report leaks. And part of the incentivization is that the leaks are fixed. People feel that it's worth reporting a leak because the next day or the next hour, depending on the severity of it or the access to it, there's a team that arrives to fix it or to see to it. And you can only do that if you've got a functioning, effective local government. And it doesn't really, as you say, it's not going to help to have parties that are arguing over the spoils and over patronage and so on. You want to see a party there that has promised it's going to, its job there is to serve the public and has some kind of credibility. And until we get that, we're not really not going to be able to fix these very practical problems.
And, I mean, the political response from the Joburg Water, for example, has not been particularly encouraging so far. As far as I can tell, the response from Joburg Water, and it's mentioned by Dr. Turton in this piece here, that Joburg Water has basically said, Rand Water is just not giving us enough water. That's the real problem here. Just mysteriously, we're not being given enough water. And there are problems at Rand Water too, don't get me wrong. But this is not really, it's not our fault, guys, please. It's not really a proper response to what could be a really big calamity. Yeah. People can make plans for when there's no electricity, and you can make some plans for when there's no water, but it's a lot harder, and it's also a lot harder for the poor in particular. Sarah, what do you make of this?
As far as the provision of water goes, Rand Water is not perfect, but the national government, and I think it was in the time of Nomvula Mokonyane and the corruption, outrageous corruption that she was involved in that put a stop to the Lesotho Highlands Water Project that was meant to be supplying Gauteng with more water because we don't have our water cannot there is no water to locally source. So we're now seeing that likely come on stream, and apparently they're doing a good job of it by 2028. So in the meantime, we have to take emergency measures. And I don't have faith that the ANC-led municipality of Joburg will keep people informed, will bring them on board, will make put out sufficient information to make informed decisions about how to deal with the issue. And one of the things apparently is possible is money from the private sector, and not with huge strings attached, but the city council had better go cap in hand now and do pretty much whatever the corporate sector is wants it to do and is prepared to help it do with its money to get things fixed, because the complexity is not the nature of the problem so much as the hugeness of it, and it just has to be worked on and has to be worked on properly for years. So it's really been trying to look when you report a leak, it does get dealt with quickly, but the infrastructure will just keep going. So unless the ANC-led municipality actually experiences a little hubris and is prepared to actually work with the people who could help, it'll happen eventually when things are dire. That's my concern.
Yeah, exactly. And Joburg, I think, in particular, it's still the economic heart of the country, will suffer very grievously from this. So we do actually begin to run out of water in the city. I've had maybe about 3 weeks this year where I didn't have water in my taps, not all at once, but in two bouts. And I can say that it did not endear me to sticking around in Joburg. That's what I'll say. Michael, any final thoughts?
I think that's absolutely right, and Sarah's point is essential, really. That it comes down to very practical things, but the problem is the huge scale of the problem. It's not going to be easily done, but it has to be tackled as soon as possible. and with the most the most pragmatic means of doing so. There is no other way. There's no simple way and no quick and easy way.
Can I just make one right. point that Swinton makes? And that is that all we have to do to save off crisis so that all these things can continue to be done is save 10% of the water that we're losing. I mean, if we can save 10% of the water that is needed, already just that alone will help us, have space to move in the crisis. It's not unimaginable.
One of the things I do just want to add is it is also worth pointing out that as much as I think the instability in the politics is leading to more problems here, it's not the whole story. Mfuleni is being much more comfortably ANC than many of these other places. It hasn't had horse trading and multiple mayors and all that, and yet it's losing 72% of its water to leaks. So a lot of this is also just years of bad management and years of politicians not being held to account by the voters, unfortunately. And that is, I think, contributing to the problem here. But okay, let's go on to our last story very briefly. I don't think there's a huge amount to say about this, but this is also about Gauteng. And this is that the e-toll gantries, the e-toll program was very fiercely resisted by South Africans from a wide swath of society, refusing to pay these extra tolls on the highways in Gauteng. And I think it was in April this year, just before the election, the Gauteng government shut down the e-toll gantries. But there's still a lot of money outstanding. And I think realizing that the political consequences would be dire, the Gauteng ANC government and the national government have decided, rather than trying to get the rest of the debt taken out from motorists who still owe it, they will be settling it themselves. Of course, that doesn't mean, government doesn't really have money because it doesn't really make money. So that money is coming out of taxpayers and license payers and all of that sort of thing. So in the end, we're still kind of paying for it. But at least, e-tolls has been such a fascinating case because it really was an incredibly successful civil disobedience tax revolt scenario. One that I think would be difficult to replicate on a larger scale. But it was, eventually even the most stubborn part of the ANC, that is Lesufi's ANC, had to admit that really they just couldn't keep this program going. Sarah, any thoughts?
Just a question for Mr. Lesufi, and that is where he's going to divert the money from to pay the 38 billion that is the 30% share of Gauteng's payback.
Michael?
I mean, these are all such magical numbers, aren't they? 3.8 billion. I mean, it's such a huge sum. And it's made to look like a relatively simple transaction. The Gauteng government has made its first installment. It's almost impossible to visualize this. But as Sara says, this is money that's coming from somewhere and at a cost. It's the whole project has come at a cost, essentially. Poorly conceived in the first place. I think some of the principles, I've seen people arguing quite eloquently that some of the basic principles are sound, that you get motorists to pay for better roads, but the battle was lost. They simply, if you don't convince people of the sensibleness of what you're doing, it's a lost cause, and this is one of them, unfortunately.
Exactly.
There we go.
Exactly. And that is the bottom line. I think the idea of people paying for roads they use is not the worst idea in the world. I mean, there's amounts and which roads in particular, and you can have all sorts of arguments about the details. As you say, that principle is not necessarily a bad one. But the way it was carried out, the arrogance from which it was pushed on people, the fact that there were all these questions about the deal itself, about whether the gantries were really, should be this expensive, about whether the company who was getting the contract was it, whether the money was going overseas, all these questions. And in the end, without the public's cooperation, they just couldn't hold it together. Unfortunately, it cost us all a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. So, it's not exactly a happy story at the end here. It's a "we told you so" kind of story, unfortunately. Anyway, thank you very much, everyone, for watching. We hope that you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Wrap. Cheers, everyone.